race car. What for? Because you hit every other damn thing out there. I want you to be perfect.
When I'm driving, I got a guy on the radio who talks to me. You can see him. He talks to me.
He didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbin' son is racing.
Hey race fans, welcome to the Hoobazoo Radio Network, and welcome to Drafting the Circuits. My name is Frank Santoroski. I'll be your host for the next hour as we discuss everything racing from the past week and preview next week. With me in the studio is Mr. Gray Warren from Richard Childress Racing, Seth Eggert, NASCAR correspondent at Motorsports Tribune, and race engineer Richard Uden. Gentlemen, how is everybody tonight?
Very good.
All right. Well, great to have you here on Independence Day week. Richard, my apologies that you all lost the colonies. But we'll talk about the racing in a moment. But we open up on a bit of a sad note today. You know, there's a saying that behind every successful man is a very strong woman. And one of the most successful gentlemen I've ever met is certainly Mario Andretti. And Mario lost his wife, Deanne, on Tuesday, to a heart attack. So our thoughts and our prayers are with the Andretti family. She was, you know, the mother to Michael, Jeff, and Barbara, grandmother to Marco, husband to Mario. Been a staple of the family. We didn't see her at the races a lot. You know, she was more in her role of, you know, being behind the scenes, but obviously a very strong woman. Family will miss her tremendously. Now, Gray, it's a different era this time and this day and age where we see wives at the racetrack all the time, and you know, there's probably pretty good reason for that, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, travel was different back in those days. The drivers didn't have the jets and the motorhomes and things like they have now, and the families did go to some of the races, but generally it was the ones that they could load the kids up in the station wagon and get to within a few hours of home. And so mostly the women of that era, they stayed home and ran the family and took care of the household. So they were more behind the scenes, and you don't they weren't as visible in Victory Lane and things like you see today. But it's just a different generation.
Yeah, but certainly her contributions to keeping that household together while everybody's
jet setting
off racing cannot be underestimated. So our thoughts go out to the Andretti family. They've been you know, a mainstay in racing for as long as I've been around, and will be for a long time. So our thoughts are with the Andretti family and all their friends and all the folks that knew Deanne, and just a very sad day. So with that being said, let's move on and talk about the races this week. Certainly a really interesting Grand Prix in Austria. We have a lot of Max Verstappen fans in the stands there. Not necessarily his home race in Austria, but, you know, the Netherlands and Belgium were only a hop, skip, and a jump over Germany to get there. But the Max Verstappen fans were out there in full force to see their hero, Max, take the win. So, Richard, really interesting and different Formula One race than we're used to seeing, especially when you consider double retirements from the Mercedes car. So let's talk about this Formula One race in Spielberg.
Yeah, I mean, it was the walk in the park that everybody predicted for Mercedes, wasn't it? You know, if you're going to pick any circuit that suits the Mercedes car, it's probably the Red Bull Ring. You know, lots of straights, short start, you know, short jab on the brakes, you know, hard turn corners, perfectly, you know, not as aero dependent as some of the tracks, which is where, you know, the Red Bulls and the Ferraris come into their own. So, you know, you put this down all day as a banker for Mercedes, and in qualifying and through practice, that's what it looked like. Nobody could touch those two cars. And then Valtteri put in a fantastic lap to take pole, you know, for the Mercedes 1-2 on the grid, and then off the start line, you saw Kimi Räikkönen from, I think it was third on the grid, have a fantastic start. And if there'd been another few hundred metres down to the first turn, I think he probably would have come out of the first corner in the lead. But, you know, everybody was a little bit, you know, sensible, and he backed off. And then a little bit later in the lap, it all got a little bit silly. Max and Kimi got together a little bit, and Max sort of forced his way through there. And pretty much between those two, that gap was, you know, as you saw it through to the end of the race. And it ended up, that one move was what cost Kimi the race, I think. But, you know, obviously the main talking point coming out this weekend was the double failure for the Mercedes cars. To see Valtteri lose, a good, solid point-scoring opportunity through what looked like a gearbox failure is very, very disappointing for a team that prides itself on this bulletproof reliability. For to have them drop out, you know, to have one car, one Mercedes car drop out was unusual. Then you saw this instance again with the virtual safety car where you felt the Mercedes sort of dropped the ball a little bit and Hamilton stayed out whilst everybody else pitted. And then you got into the scenario where when Hamilton did have to pit, he came out fourth and actually lost another position to Vettel. So he was running, I believe, fifth for a long period. Then I believe Ricciardo lost transmission. And then eventually Hamilton sort of dropped out as well. But the really big talking point, as I say, you know, failures happen. Failures do happen. And it's to be expected when you push the car to the limit. But this is the second time this season that we've seen Mercedes throw away a win through strategy. Bearing in mind, if Hamilton had finished, he wouldn't have won the race. Obviously, we didn't know that he was going to have the failure. When Mercedes left him out on that safety car period, or the virtual safety car, sorry. And their argument at the time was that if Hamilton had pitted, everybody else would have stayed out. And yeah, possibly, but there's something not quite right, you know, with how they run that. Now, they got their chief strategist, a guy called James Vowles, on the radio there, and he personally apologised to Hamilton. Now, you know, James has been there at least 15 years. He was there when I was working with that team, when it was Honda back in the day. And, you know, one of the best strategies in Formula 1. I mean, the number of races that they've won takes some, you know, doing. And at the end of the day, when you're the fastest car out there by half a second in the lap, it's not hard to win races. But, you know, the guy is still a very, very sharp, smart guy. And mistakes will happen. In the same way that the guy who was assembling the hydraulic system for the gearbox, you know, he's made a mistake and caused the failure. Or whatever it may have been. So, you know, I think he was unfairly... Now, maybe it was his decision to come on the radio and personally apologise to Hamilton. If it was the team's decision to push him onto the radio, I think that was a little bit unfair. If it was his decision, then fair play to the guy. He stepped up and he sort of put his head above the parapet and has been prepared for everybody to take a shot at him. But, you know, I think the fact that Hamilton did, retire probably masked that issue a little bit. If he'd finished the race in fourth or fifth, then I think obviously that would have been far more of a talking point. Interestingly enough, I still don't think that Hamilton would have won the race, even if he had pitted under the virtual safety car and they hadn't had the problem. I think the way that they were graining those soft tyres, you saw with Ricciardo, was, you know, there's no way he would have got to the end of the race. So I think they had three issues there this weekend, which was very unusual. And, heading into Silverstone now, this coming weekend, the home race for most of these teams, it'll be interesting to see how they react. You expect a bit of a reaction from Hamilton in front of his home crowd.
Yeah. Now we did see a lot of really severe tire wear and tire issues and blistering and just holes in the tires there. So I don't know if that's just the compound with the track or whatnot. But
I think what you probably saw was a 20 degree temperature change in the track between Friday practice when they do the long run simulation and Sunday during the race. It was the track was a lot hotter and. You know, the tyres are pretty susceptible. Partly it's how hard the driver pushes as well. you know, the rear tires especially are very, very, especially on a track like Red Bull Ring, where you're in the traction zone a lot of the time, far more than most tracks. You know, your rear tires do take punishment around there. And also, you know, the curves are very, very aggressive curves around. And you saw, especially in practice, a number of guys, you know, McLaren had a damaged front wing. Toro Rosso, I think, damaged two front wings. Sauber, I believe, damaged the front wing. But then you look at, you know, you look at the way they drive, and without knowing the details of it, it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility that some of the damage that was caused to the Mercedes gearbox and the Red Bull gearbox could potentially have been caused by, you know, being aggressive on those curbs. Pure speculation, but it wouldn't be beyond belief.
Yeah, so, and one of the other things coming out of this, so let's, first off, the podium was Verstappen, Kimi Raikkonen, for his second place there. Yep. First time I think we've seen him in position to actually win a race in a while. Yep. And it's pretty well documented he's fighting for his job at this point, or perhaps the fight is over, as Leclerc is, you know, seems to be the heir apparent to that seat there. Vettel comes home third after a grid penalty, but in fourth place we saw the Haas car for their best their best finish ever. So are things looking up for Haas, or is this just a matter of the attrition, because you figure you've got the you know, one of the Red Bulls and two of the Mercedes out of the race, or is this just, you know, really good strategy and good racecraft on the part of the Haas team?
I mean, I think they looked quick all weekend. You go all the way back to Australia at the start of the season, and of course those two failures of the pit stop, you know, equipment and the pit guns and the release with loose wheel nuts and all this sort of stuff. You know, everybody said, well, you know, that was their chance to get ahead of the game and, you know, snatch points while other people were still developing the car, and that's very, very true. But you know, it's pretty obvious that you've got the three big teams at the moment, and they're stretching that lead, the Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes. So, in reality, bar any issues to any of those cars, you're fighting for seventh. And you saw three retirements, so you're fighting for fourth. And, you know, fair play to the Haas guys. They went out there, they did the business, they, you know, bought their cars home, which, you know, their pace showed that all weekend. So, you know, they've got to get a lot of credit there. I know both of those drivers have been under a little bit of pressure. I mean, for how well Haas have perceivedly done this year, you know, I believe this was the first points for Grosjean, and, you know, they probably haven't picked up as many points as their pace deserved in many ways. But, no, huge amount of credit to those guys. Very well deserved.
All right, so beyond the Haas team, let's talk about our winner a little more. Verstappen has said quite publicly he's not ready to give this championship to Mercedes. I mean, looking at the remaining schedule and the points gap, you know, and Mercedes' penchant for blowing a strategy, do you think that there's a serious charge he can make? Or is it just idle talk from a young guy hoping for the best?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's obviously got to stand up, and he's got to you know, say what needs to be said, for want of a better word. He can't turn around and say, well, you know, that's it, we're over and done with. You know, the guy is quick. You know, there's no doubt about it. You know, when he gets everything together, and he drove a great race. You know, everybody will sit down and talk about the Mercedes failures and mechanically and strategy wise, but hey, that guy didn't make a mistake. He did the best he could do that weekend, and to beat the two Ferraris, which were arguably the faster car than the Red Bull, you know, throughout the weekend, was a great achievement. But you look at the races coming up, and you know, you'd think Hungary, Red Bull have probably got a chance, Singapore possibly. Outside of that, you're really struggling. You know, there's a lot of fast-flowing tracks there. You know, you got Silverstone, you've got the German race, you got Spa, Monza. You know, you might as well give the Mercedes the trophy on that one already. Russia's a fast-flowing circuit.
Aren't we supposed to give Ferrari the trophy at Monza?
No.
Okay, I thought the officials there saw to that, but that's maybe that's back in the day. I don't know.
Back in the day. No, I mean, it'd be great. Hey, it'd be great to see. It'd be so good to see. But you know, the Mercedes is just too powerful. So I think, you know, they could snatch a couple more wins, Red Bull. But no, it's, again, you saw the pace of the Mercedes cars, and you fully expect, you know, let's put it this way. The mechanical failures that we saw in Austria will not happen again. End of story. No way that's going to happen again. My guess is that they probably had a new rev of gearbox component, hydraulic component, whatever it may be, and it failed. They'll go back to the old version, which worked perfectly well for the first 8 races of the year, and you know, they'll never bat an eyelid on that again. The new air, you know, they did bring some very aggressive aero upgrades to Austria, which is interesting because Austria is not a hugely demanding aero track. It's mainly sort of rear grip traction where you'll benefit in Austria. So it's interesting to see that they brought those changes there, but it maybe was just a good opportunity for them to get some miles on those parts ahead of Silverstone, which is a hugely aero-dependent track. So, I really do think that over the next, between now and the summer break, I think you're going to see, you know, the Mercedes car sort of stretch their legs a little bit.
All right. And then the other notable thing was this is the Red Bull's team first win at the track that bears their name, the Red Bull Ring. And also, again, you know, the large amount of Dutch and Belgian fans that came to Austrian droves got to see their hero Max Verstappen win. And that's always pretty neat when the hometown guy wins the race and the crowd just loves it. So that's, that's really good stuff.
Yeah. Now, it's fantastic.
It is. Now, Gray, Seth, did you guys get a chance to watch the Formula One race? You have any comments to make or any questions to throw at Richard?
I watched bits and pieces of it and didn't get to see the finish. When I was watching it, I guess Hamilton had not had his misfortune yet, and he was leading the race and looked like he was headed to a certain victory. So kind of when I checked back several hours later, I was surprised to see that Hamilton had fallen out.
I watched it. I thought it was fairly interesting. Otherwise, the one thing I found impressive was Alonso starting from pit road and scoring points. I believe even he said that he was not expecting to score points in a Grand Prix after starting on pit road.
Yeah, well, he definitely benefited from the you know, retirements of the two Mercedes and the one Red Bull. Ricardo didn't finish the race either. But, yeah, I mean, you know, good on McLaren. McLaren is one of those classic teams in Formula 1 that's been around forever, and it blows my mind that their struggles have gone on this long. You know, they switched from the Honda to the Renault. They blame the Honda engine for their struggles last year. They're struggling just as mightily this year. You know, amidst all the rumors that Alonso's out the door and on his way to IndyCar. So, but good to see Alonso win the points, huh, Richard?
Yeah, I'll take issue a little bit. They're not where they want to be, but are they struggling as much as we've seen in the past? Every time Alonso's finished a race this year, he's finished in the points. You know, Alonso's ahead of Hülkenberg and Sainz in the factory Renault team, for want of a better word. So, you know, and he's 1 point behind Kevin Magnussen, you know, in that sort of seventh place, which is, in all fairness, is the best they can do.
Right, the best of the rest, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're never going to make it in the top six. So, you know, Alonso is actually, I think, doing okay. You know, he's sort of punching his way up there. The guy that is concerned about the right word? I'm not sure. Is Van Dorn. You know, you look at him and he came in and everybody rated him very, very highly. In the same way they did with Kevin Magnussen when he first stepped up into the McLaren. And he's, you know, he's only scored points in 3 races this year. He's been outside of the points in the last 5. And it's just, you know, Alonso's a great driver. So we're not saying he has to go out and beat Alonso, but Alonso's got 36 points so far. Van Dorn's got 8. you know, it's, you know, you need to, I mean, he's been beaten by, you know, in the, Charles Leclerc in Sauber and Gasly and, you know, guys that you would expect him to, you know, somebody in a sister car to Alonso to be beating. So I think that's one of the issues, is Van Dorn's poor race performance. I think one lap speed in qualifying is pretty competent, but I think he's struggling a little bit, you know, in the race trim and race setup. So I think he needs to improve that. But Alonso, they're doing pretty good. And are McLaren struggling? Yeah, they probably are, but not as bad as people make them out to be, I don't think.
How many more races before the summer break?
I think it's three. Yeah, it's three. So they've got Great Britain this weekend, and then there's Germany and Hungary, and then they have the break, and then they come back for Spa and Monza before they go fly away again for the end of the season run.
And the break is generally, what, a month long?
Something like that. There's a week.
4 weeks.
So typically you'll have a wind-down week, then you'll have 2 weeks break, and then you have the setup week again.
Now, do they do any testing during that off time or no?
So all you're allowed to do, and this is where it got a little bit political. So during the off time, you're only allowed to do maintenance in your facility. And I don't know exactly how they go about it, but the FIA basically does check that these places are locked down properly. So you're allowed to do maintenance. You're allowed to, you know, carry out maintenance on wind tunnels, stuff that typically would not directly produce a performance gain. You know, going back in, you know, also what you get a lot of the time is that in a lot of these parts that these teams run are obviously bespoke custom parts, so you'd have a huge push going up to the shutdown to get all your parts designed, get sent out to third-party manufacturing companies, and then when you'd return in the 2 weeks, they were all available for you. There's one team which will remain anonymous, but they got scolded by the FAA a few years ago because they were paying for facilities within the UK who could manufacture Formula One spec parts. They were paying for their work time, but not giving them any work to do. In other words, stopping them from working for other teams. And when the FAA found out about that, they got a little slap on the wrist for that one.
So, okay, so explain that further. So they essentially tied up all the engineers?
Yeah. Well, they bought up machine time on all of these third-party machine shops and said, hey, look, you know, we're going to, you know, if you charge $50 an hour for your machine to manufacture parts for us, we're going to buy up all of your time, but not give you any work to do.
So they couldn't do it. Oh, I got it. Yeah, that's pretty nifty there. So,
and as I say, when the FAA found out about that, they got a little slap on the wrist for that one.
Well, yeah, that's got to be pretty practically impossible to really.
There's not that
police.
Many companies that can. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's, you know, there's a lot of police. You know, how the FIA police that? I mean, at the end of the day, these are third party companies, and they can, you know, come and go as they please and do what they want. But you know,
can you imagine if they tried that in NASCAR? No. Told everybody, we're going to take a month break, and you can't work, can't have anybody in the shop for 2 weeks. That'd be
yeah. It's, you know, the actual policing of the shutdown itself. The FIA are pretty good, and you know what? The teams are pretty good on it as well. You know, they realize, they get how it works. You know, they know that it's in their best interest that their guys, you know, they go on vacation with the family.
Sure.
Down to, I mean, yeah. I worked with one guy. He'd had 3 days vacation in 6 years.
Yeah. It's a grind, no doubt. And to give these guys some time off is crucial, particularly in this day and time.
Yeah.
All right. So we're on to Silverstone next. So, Richard, you care to make a pick for Silverstone? You've already talked about the Mercedes being strong there, so do you like Hamilton to win his home Grand Prix again, or you think Valtteri's got something for him?
I've been saying the last few weeks, I'm going to pick Valtteri again. I think he's, you know, that pole in Austria would have done his confidence a power of good, you know, giving him a huge, huge boost. And, yeah, I think he's going to carry that on. I really do. I think he's going to step up and he's going to, hopefully he's going to get the business done this weekend. He deserves it. He really does. He's had some pretty rotten luck these days.
I was going to say, yeah, if it was for bad luck, he'd have no luck at all. So
exactly. I mean, he should be, in all rights, a championship contender, you know.
Is that this weekend or next weekend?
That's this coming weekend. This is the third race in the Formula One's first ever triple header.
Okay. So, yeah, a lot of stuff going on over there. Got that, and then we'll have the Open Championship.
Yep. A bit of golf going on, a bit of tennis. And actually, yep. On another, you know, we'll probably discuss it in a couple more weeks, but coming up soon, there's the Goodwood Festival of Speed.
Which is always a fun event, yeah.
And this year, there's going to be the first fully autonomous vehicle challenge, the hill climb, one of the robo-racing vehicles, which are pretty impressive pretty impressive machines, if anybody gets a chance to look at those. They're pretty neat, they are.
Yeah, I like to see that. That'd be kind of interesting.
That's become such an international show with cars from all different disciplines going over there.
And, I know Richard Petty quite often sends cars over there, doesn't he?
And Childress has sent cars over there from year after year. So yeah, there's a lot of NASCAR influence in the last decade or so.
Yep.
All right, so Gray, so Richard's taking Valtteri Bottas. Who do you like for Silverstone?
I guess I'm gonna have to go with Hamilton. That's the smart money.
That's the smart money, Seth. Who do you like for Silverstone?
I'm gonna go with Raikkonen.
All right, so that leaves me Sebastian Vettel, or Lance Stroll, but I'll go with Vettel. So. So anyway, so moving on, NASCAR was at Chicagoland this weekend down in Joliet. Pretty intense race there at the end. We saw Kyle and Kyle show, Kyle Larson and Kyle Busch bumping and banging a little bit at the end. Kyle Busch was the benefactor at the end of the day and won his fifth race on the season. But, for his part, Kyle Larson, who had a shot for the win, was not upset at all. Matter of fact, he gave Kyle Busch a thumbs up, and his comment was, "Wow, that was fun racing." But as I think about this, and as I think about how many second place finishes Kyle Larson has, and how Kyle Larson has said he dumped a guy in a super speedway once and doesn't ever want to do it again. I wonder if he's just not aggressive enough at the end of the race. To where his gentlemanliness is costing him wins, because I think he could have kind of bore down on that a little bit, but I don't know. But Gray, you guys talk about it.
He did all he could do. I mean, I thought it was very aggressive. He did what he could do. He tried to pull the slide job, and he didn't quite get up. I mean, good fully alongside of Kyle and the two touched. Coming out of turn two, which led to the series of events. I thought he was pretty aggressive. He got Kyle out of shape, got him in the fence, was able to get go underneath. He just couldn't get away from Kyle. You know, Kyle showed some tenacity and some grit and kept his foot in it and drove back up to him, and you knew what was coming, and so did Kyle. It was just good, hard racing. I think both of those two competitors respected one another, and I think it was the last lap, and the gloves come off, and you got to do what you can do to win. Kyle Larson is a racer. He gets it. He understands it, he's the future of our sport. He and several others are gonna take this sport, the next generation that's gonna replace some of these guys that the Harvicks and the Johnsons and go forward. So yeah, it was good to see. NASCAR needed a good finish like that to kind of stir the pot a little bit and get the fans excited. I thought overall from start to finish it was a pretty pretty entertaining race.
Yeah, it was a very fun race to watch. Yeah, I enjoyed it a ton.
It was a little bit old fashioned kind of racing. It was very hot there, so you had the element of the heat working on the drivers and the crews and everything. So that was part of it too. And the guys put on a really good show. I thought for the most part had several different stage winners. That was nice. And then we, of course, Kyle rallied. Kyle didn't really have a good car for most of the day. Really complained about it. Didn't like it. And through working on it and staying with it during the course of the race, his pit crew kind of got it to where he could drive it a little bit better. Once he got out front, the car reacted different, and he was able to run up front. And of course, we had Larson, who was able to chase him down. Good to see a Chevrolet run well there. That probably helped the Chevrolet camp a little bit, showing there's a little bit of promise there in the Camaro. So I'm sure that was a nice thing and a nice shot in the arm for Chip Ganassi Racing too. Because that was a good run. But, we're going to a different type of racetrack this weekend, going back to Daytona, and all bets are off. That's pretty much back to a plate track, the Great Equalizer. We'll probably see, like we always do, a competitive race there. The July 4th race at Daytona tends to be a little bit different from the February race. It becomes more of a handling race because that track, even though it's run at night, it reacts different than it does in the daylight in February. So the track will be a little bit more greasy, a little bit slicker, and of course handling is a little bit more of a premium there on Saturday night. But I look forward to a good show there too as well, like we always generally see at the summer Daytona race.
All right, now Seth, what comments do you have about this Chicago race?
Well, first off, that battle for the end of stage two was pretty intense between teammates Kevin Harvick and Kurt Busch.
Yes, it was. Yep.
Harvick pretty much snookered Kurt on the final corner of the final lap of that stage, ended up winning the stage, getting the playoff point. Kurt was none too happy about it on the radio, but that's racing for you. Larson, not only did he say that he didn't want to clear Kyle Busch before turn three because he knew what was going to be coming, just the car control that both he and Kyle Busch had after the second contact in turn three, in which Larson went drifting through the corner, and Kyle Busch, he bounced off the wall, but he was able to steer a car with a broken control arm and a broken right front suspension down the track and to take the victory. That was just impressive, and it was a very hot weekend, as you said. Kurt Busch, he had the temperature gauge for NBC in his car, and at one point it said 152 degrees.
Yes, I saw that.
And in the Xfinity Series race, Justin Allgaier also had it. It reached 154 before it broke and simply read high.
Yeah.
Hi.
those cars are very hot inside, and you compare those to the older race cars. I mean, drivers have always run in those conditions in the summertime, but these cars today are more sealed off. They turn more RPM, so therefore they generate more heat and through the exhaust running up under the car. And then too, it's always got hot in these old cars. The older race cars, they used to, you roll up the windows on both sides and it got hot in those. But these cars today, the way they're constructed and the way they race, they're pretty well sealed off. So all that heat just kind of sinks in that car and has nowhere really to go. So yeah, hats off to those drivers. It is a hostile environment that they go to work in. I think a lot of people, other professional athletes, don't realize what these drivers go through in a hot summer race. And then you have other issues sometimes, the fresh air system in their helmets that blows cool air in. Sometimes that malfunctions and makes things even worse. They have started to wear some of these gel vests that keep their core temperature a little bit cooler, too. So, yeah, there's a lot of things. But really, these guys do work hard to get acclimated to this. And I think and Seth can probably allude to this when we discuss the Xfinity race from Saturday. That was another race where the conditions were very hot. And those drivers, even after a 300-mile race, or was it 300 or 200 Saturday?
It was 300.
300. Those drivers were whipped after that show, too. So, yeah, hats off to those guys that competed in that heat this weekend.
And going to the Xfinity Series, there were actually drivers in both series that had either the cool air conditioning, and it's not really air conditioning, but the air hoses either fail or even the cool suits fail. Yeah. In the Cup Series, Trevor Bayne had issues. In the Xfinity Series, Justin Allgaier, Chase Elliott. So there were issues throughout. And it was a race that it was pretty much dominated by Cup drivers. Kyle Larson won the race. He led 80 of the 200 laps. Harvick was up front quite a bit. Suarez was up front quite a bit. The only time any of the Xfinity Series regulars even led laps, Christopher Bell and Brandon Jones, was pretty much right after the end of stages when they inherited the lead.
And Tyler Reddick was strong in the first segment.
He was until a speeding penalty, and then it all went downhill from there.
Yeah, he had a miscue on pit road as well. His first pit stop kind of put him behind, and his second pit stop was when he got caught speeding. But I believe Tyler won the first,
first
stage and was pretty strong during that stage and would look to be the class of the field early on until he had his troubles on pit road.
And because of those troubles on pit road, he restarted deep in the field and got caught up in an accident about halfway into the race.
Yeah, Jeb Burton got sideways and collected several cars and put an end to his day. But that was a pretty good race there, I thought as well for the Xfinity cars. They put on a good show. So all in all, it was a good weekend of racing in Chicago.
And real quick, the Truck Series was also in action at Chicago. Brett Moffitt won with a brand new sponsor, well, new to that team, Freight Auctions. They sponsored Moffitt back in 2015 when he was running for the Rookie of the Year in the Cup Series. It was their first race on the truck. They were battling for the win with John Hunter Nemechek when, going into turn one on the final lap, John Hunter blows his engine.
I think we've lost Gray there, but okay, it's interesting that you talk about the cool suits there and the air conditioning units. Sort of, question why some of these drivers have to use these. You know, they do get very hot inside the car, but to give you an idea, these things draw about, depending on which model they use, which version, 2 to 3 horsepower out of the engine. So, you know, you're searching for every little ounce of performance you can get, and then for something such as this to take that amount of power away from the engine, but them still be okay to use it, to really just show, you know, how essential these pieces of equipment are for the driver and their concentration levels.
Yeah, I mean, you figure these guys just staying, just keeping their mental acuity, you know, during that time when it gets so hot. And basically, you know, one thing they do use the cool suit or the cool vest that has the gel in it that circulates and keeps their core temperature cool. But the biggest thing is we call it an air conditioner. Basically, it's what we call a cool box that they mount in the car and takes in air from outside and exchanges it and cools the air that's blown into the helmet so that the driver is essentially breathing cool air. And that also keeps his helps keep his core temperature somewhat cooler and keeps him alert. But I tell you what, you figure when in temperatures like 150 degrees inside that race car with no air stirring around, it's it, like I said before, it's a hostile environment, no doubt.
Now, there were also a couple drivers that had some creative solutions with the heat to try to stay cool. Kevin Harvick actually went and doused his fire suit in water before the race, as does Jimmy Johnson and the advice he got from Dale Jr. And it was, he said it was actually pretty good for him, that he felt cooler throughout the race.
What you've seen sometimes is when drivers, some drivers do that, and they end up basically boiling themselves.
Yeah, because it steams.
Giving themselves steam burns. So they've got to be a little bit careful.
Yeah,
I know that.
We've dealt with heat, and the guys down in pit road deal with heat too. Obviously, it's not 100. We're not dealing 150 degrees, but you know, with the new rules, I've been in the sport a long time, and have seen the sport change. And you know, early on when we used to pit the cars, we just, you know, we had regular uniforms on, trousers and shirts. And then as NASCAR changed and made the pit crews go to the fire suits and the flame retardant underwear that like the drivers use, I mean, we had to kind of get acclimated too. And you learn little tricks and things and what you can wear that kind of wick water away from your body and things like that. But even it's hot on the cruise down on pit road, because you're standing around, there's only the shade that you have from the pit box, but you're standing on hot asphalt for 3 hours too. And it's a tough. So basically, you know, everybody has to hydrate and deal with those temperatures.
All right, now let me ask you this, because I want to just go back a little bit, several years, because you're talking about the bringing the air in to the helmet and whatnot, and I mean, this is fresh air coming in, but I just remember, like, say, like a guy like Rick Mast, right? You remember Rick Mast?
Yeah,
he had after years of driving NASCAR, he said he had a lot of health issues based on breathing carbon monoxide, and I'm sure that there's other guys that had it too. But I mean, is there anything in place to where we're trying to bring this air this day and age where
it helps?
Okay, I just was kind of wondering because we were talking about go ahead.
And like anything else, it's been evolutionary. You know, this cool box thing has been around for a number of years now, and they've made improvements over the years. And obviously, you know, carbon monoxide in close quarters racing on some of your short tracks, when a lot of air is not moving around in the racetrack, the carbon monoxide levels go up in the race car. They've had certain over the years they've had certain bio things on the drivers to check that and things, but yeah, these systems now, there's filters that go through before that air goes into the helmet. It's filtered. It goes through a catalyst that takes the carbon monoxide out of it. So yeah, that's one thing that one of the improvements that has come about in the last 10 years, and they're constantly working on these things to make them better for the drivers.
Yeah, I mean, keeping drivers cool during races is as old as racing. I remember, there was a Indy 500 back in the 50s where they actually had a driver die of heat exhaustion. The race, and then I think Bill Vukovic had won that race, and then he was just overwhelmed and collapsed in victory lane. So, and that's back in the 50s. So yeah, we've come a long way, but still, still racing in the hot with all the heat coming off the edge, heat coming off the car. That still, takes a very fit individual.
Sure, it does.
To deal with that and come out okay. So, that's. Go ahead.
Speaking of Indianapolis, that's one hot place in August. When, of course, we're going up there in September this year for the Brickyard 400. But when that Brickyard is run in late July, early August, that can be one hot place up there that time of year.
Oh, sometimes it can be miserable in May. I can only imagine how bad it is running in July. So,
oh, it's terrible.
But yeah, we'll see how it see how they comes off in September. September can be much cooler in Indianapolis. Hopefully, they'll get a great crowd for that this year. So,
and it's the last race before the chase begins. I believe that's right, isn't it, Seth? That Indy's the last Indy.
Yes, it's the cutoff race.
Yeah.
Right.
So that should create Richmond, a little bit of a buzz as well too. So hopefully that we'll have a good showing and get a good crowd up there for that race as well.
And the Xfinity Series will have that restricted air package as well.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. And I can't wait to see that again because that was pretty cool last year.
It does work at that particular racetrack, and that's where it was introduced last year. So yeah, that should be another fun show for those guys up there.
But, all right,
yeah, I guess we can start and turn our attention now to Daytona. This will be the 18th race of the season, the halfway point in the season. So we can kind of look back, and of course, when you look, we've got two drivers sitting now, Harvick and Kyle Busch, with 5 wins each. So that's 10 of the 18, 10 of the 17 so far. And we've got Truex has won 3. That's 13. We've got Harvick's teammate, Clint Bowyer, with 2.
With 2, yeah. Joey Logano's won 1.
Joey Logano and Austin Dillon.
Austin Dillon won 1, yep. So, yeah, so we have, like I say, Daytona's a crapshoot. So, anybody can win this. It's a good opportunity for somebody who's right on the fringe of being in the cutoff to maybe make the chase. Great opportunity for somebody. So who wants to throw
out? Yeah, somebody can pull a rabbit out of their hat. Yeah.
Exactly. Somebody like Ricky Stenhouse, like we saw last year, right? So, but who wants to go ahead and make a pick?
Y'all go ahead. I'll go ahead and see what you think. What do you think?
Go on, Frank. Who are you going to go for?
Oh, I'm going to go with Keselowski. The man is probably one of the best at restricted play races, and he's been winless in the regular season. Yes, he won the Busch Clash, that doesn't count to get you in the playoffs. But Brad is always strong at those restricted play races. I'll go Brad, and then I'll throw it to you, Richard.
Kurt Busch
and Seth.
Yeah, I mean
Eric Almirola.
All right, Gray, you get the last pick.
Okay. Well, it looks like Ford is the we all know Ford might be the dominant car there, and you guys have picked 3 Fords there for sure. Oh, gosh. I'm gonna stick my neck out this time, and I'm going to say Ryan Blaney finally gets that win there. When we've been expecting him to – the 12 car, look for that to run pretty good. He was in great position to win the Daytona 500 until – we got tied up in that last caution flag there, which allowed the restart to happen and enabled Austin Dillon to get around Almirola and win the race. So yeah, I'm gonna go with Blaney.
That's a good pick. Yeah, yeah, Blaney definitely needs to be in the chase. So so we've all picked Ford. So which that'll probably mean that
now Chevrolet will win.
Yeah, so Kyle Larson will come through with the win, or Jimmy Johnson will win. Lord knows we haven't seen him win in a while. So Daytona's coming up. Also on the weekend, the IndyCars are going to be in Iowa on a little bull ring. In Iowa, they've changed this from a Saturday night race to a Sunday afternoon race, which has, number one, hurt the attendance. Number two, done no favors for the track that used to pack him in, but so they, the new IndyCar package, the UAK 18 Universal Aero Kit, did not perform really well at Phoenix, which was with the other short oval. It was fairly processional, fairly follow the leader. In fact, it's that they've not managed to draw a crowd at Phoenix in 3 years, and Phoenix has been dropped off the schedule. A lot of speculation as who's going to take Phoenix's place there. Homestead, Miami seems to be the leader right there in that thing. But, you know, that's all for a later time or a later date. But in the meantime, the Indy cars tested at Iowa, and it was the all four Andretti cars led by Ryan Hunter-Reay, who just blew the rest of the field away in the test times. But again, they've done a couple tweaks with the aero. Not sure what kind of race we're going to see at Iowa, other than it looks like the Andretti cars will be strong. I mean, what do you guys think going into Iowa with Iowa? It was such a good race. But the last couple have been, I want to say it was 2 years ago, Newgarden led nearly every lap.
Bourdais dominate there a couple of years ago as well, lapped everybody or something.
Never,
you know, the best race,
never won there.
The best race we saw there, it was probably 4 or 5 years ago when Ryan Hunter-Reay blew through the field on fresh tires with 10 to go. And that was a very, very exciting race to see. He came down pit road, got fresh tires, had a late race restart, and he was able to overpower the field, really, and go on for the win. So, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Ryan Hunter-Reay's got 2 wins at Iowa.
Two or three. He's got at least 2. He may have 3. Yeah, but Ryan Hunter-Reay is a guy who right now is. He leapt from 4th in points to 2nd. He's behind Scott Dixon, you know, by...
He's had some strong runs, too, of late.
You know, he has a win this season, has 3 second places. He's positioning himself as a championship contender right now, and Iowa's a track that agrees with him very well. The Andretti cars tested there very well. He was fastest. It would be very fitting and nice to see an Andretti car win, especially since the devastating news of, Michael losing his mother.
Yeah.
Racing isn't always sentimental. Racing is about racing, but it would be neat to see. But
I'm sure that would be on the thoughts of a lot of his crew and that team this weekend.
Even so, Marco, one of Marco's 2 wins came at Iowa. I mean, to see Marco win would be incredible. It's been since 2011 that he's won a race. He's been nipping at it. But again, I don't want to get into this for the sentimental reasons, but the Andretti cars sure do look good there. But at the same time, I just really hope they can put on a good show, bring the crowds back to Iowa. They really need to push it back to a Saturday night race rather than well, they've got a late Sunday afternoon, which, travel wise for folks that have to work on Monday, they're just not going to go. If you make that a Saturday night race, you might travel from Wisconsin or Minnesota or even from Indiana to go out to Iowa.
And
spend Sunday. Spend Sunday driving back, but if you got to work Monday, you're really limiting the amount of folks that have that track within a day trip. So,
what was the reasoning behind them moving the race from a night race to a Sunday afternoon?
Television.
Yeah.
Television. Yeah, well, television is always the reason for your time slot. So.
Yeah, but, and I thought it was unusual too. You know, Chicago, the Cup race at Chicago has been run on Saturday night in the past as well too, because that track does have lights. So yeah, I thought that, you know, and that time of year in Illinois is hot too out in the Midwest, and I thought that probably again was another one that we had probably seen a better crowd that, you know, on hand had the race been at night.
I mean IndyCar fans love the ovals and they want more oval races, but the fans don't show up to them, right? But then again, IndyCar shoots itself in the foot by moving, Iowa from a Saturday night. And they've even done neat stuff in the past. Remember, a couple of years ago, they had heat races for qualifying rather than single single car qualifying. Mm-hmm. They had the little heat races. That was really neat. They packed the place then. But now they made it Sunday at 3 in the afternoon. But either way, we've got a couple minutes left. I'm going to pick Ryan Hunter Ray and let you guys pick whoever you'd like to. Seth?
Ryan Hunter Ray is probably the smart money, but, I'll go Newgarden.
Yeah, Newgarden, smart money, too. I mean, that guy's on a tear. Seth?
I'll go with Marco Andretti. With all of the bad news that his family's had recently, it's time for some good news.
Wouldn't it be neat to see Marco win a race? Because everybody's so down. Everybody's been so down on this guy, but yet he works hard and he tries hard. He just hasn't had the results. I mean, there are times where he looks like, yeah, you're not trying, whatever. You know, change his number, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, Marco, number change ain't going to win. You need a talent change. But the guy actually, he's pretty sharp behind the wheel. He just, his motivation has been questionable year after year. But I think he's probably positioned to win a race sooner rather than later, or maybe never again. Either way, it's one or the other. He's either going to open up the floodgates to winter races, or he's just stuck where he's at. So, I don't know. Richard, you get a pick for Iowa before we go off the air.
Robert Wickens.
Robert Wickens. That's an interesting pick.
He was pretty useful at Phoenix earlier in the year, wasn't he? And it's the different tracks, but it's a short oval, not particularly high banking, I believe. And he could be pretty sharp around there.
He sure could, yeah. The other one I don't want to leave out is Sebastian Bourdais.
Yeah,
he was really good at Phoenix. He just ran into some trouble. But, yeah, so we'll have to see how this all plays out. So we're just about at the end of the hour here. So I just want to go around the table real quick. Final thought for each of you in the group. I'll start with you, Gray.
Just looking forward to a good race at Daytona. Like I said, the summer race at Daytona is always the traditional halfway point of the NASCAR season. So we're going to see how this season ends up, and got a lot to look forward to in the second half.
Absolutely. Now, Seth?
TV ratings for both the Xfinity and Cup races at Chicagoland were up. Some people are crying Dale Jr. for that.
Well, I'm sure that was. I'm sure that had a little bit of a spike because people wanted to see it. And NASCAR kind of, we mentioned that on the show a couple of weeks ago, that I'm sure NASCAR was hoping that the Dale Jr. factor would give them a little bit of a bump in the ratings, and maybe it did. He did a job. I thought he did a great job.
I watched it at work where we have the TV, so I didn't get to hear Dale at all. So, but you guys thought he did well?
Yeah, thought I did a good job.
All right, fantastic. So, Seth, you're great for Dale.
I think he did a pretty good job.
All right, good. I didn't get to hear it. I just got to see it. So now, Richard, one more thought for the evening.
Yeah, the next couple of weeks are going to be in two of the three main series we discussed, IndyCar and Formula One. You expect to see somebody really sort of start to grab the championships. Somebody, one of the big contenders in IndyCar, goes out and grabs a couple of wins back to back, and same in Formula One. You're probably going to see somebody start to pull away with the championships. And probably by the end of July, we're going to have a better idea of who's going to be coming out on top at the end of the season.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think IndyCar, we only got four or five races left because we have such a short season. So.
Well, that's very true.
Yeah. So, but you got, two guys we didn't mention are Rossi and Dixon, who are totally embroiled in the championship battle. So, and both those guys could do well at Iowa. So, but anyway, we're right at the end of the hour. I want to thank you, Gray, Seth, Richard. I want to thank the Hoobazoo Radio Network, and I want to thank iHeartRadio, and I want to thank all you folks that tune in and listen to us drone on week in and week out. Guys, enjoy the races. We'll talk to you in a week. Good night.
WHOOBAZOO. That's Zoobazoo.com.
Enter your website. Enter your website. Enter your website. Enter your website.